It's Tuesday, July 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hi, glad to have you with us. Coming up, Greece and its creditors negotiate after voters reject EU austerity. China could play a bigger threat to the global economy as its stocks fall.
The question at issue is Iran going to be allowed to conduct research and development on very advanced centrifuges so that in 15 years' time, when the deal expires, it could get to a weapons capability very quickly?
Questions remain about a nuclear deal with Iran. Also ahead, minions are here to serve, in the movies, that is. It's all on today's International Edition. Greece was no closer Monday to reaching a new bailout deal with its international creditors, but Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras is set to offer new proposals at a European Union summit later Tuesday. Pressure mounted throughout the day on Athens, with one of its lenders, the European Central Bank, deciding not to change the level of its emergency credit to Greek banks, even as they struggled to replenish cash machines. Greek government controls on withdrawals have been extended through Wednesday, with some analysts saying that without a new bailout agreement, the banks could run out of money within days. Mr. Tsipras spoke Monday by phone with German Chancellor Angela Merkel, Europe's chief advocate for imposing tough austerity measures on the Athens government. Their conversation took place in the aftermath of a resounding Greek vote Sunday against the lenders' demands for new financial restrictions in Greece in exchange for more bailout money. Later, the German leader met with French President François Hollande in Paris about the Greek crisis, and they declared that the door is open for more negotiations with Athens. But European officials did not immediately change their stance against easing terms of a possible new bailout in the wake of the 61% vote against more austerity. Economic analysts say the long-running dispute still could force Greece from the 19-nation euro currency bloc, which would make it the first country to exit the eurozone in its 16-year history. VOA's Alexis Christofaris is monitoring the markets from our New York bureau. Alexis, great to have you with us, and a busy day as the Greek financial crisis continues.
Interesting indeed. Lots of news coming out of Greece today. First off, that new finance minister, Euclid Tsakalotos. He has been sworn in as Greece's new finance minister after Yanis Varoufakis resigned under pressure from his government and Greece's creditors. They had seen him as really an obstacle to talks on a new bailout. So the new finance minister was the country's top negotiator in aid talks with creditors. So he is a familiar face and he has intimate knowledge of the negotiations. Also, news coming out of the European Central Bank. It is tightening the screws on the Greek banks after Greece overwhelmingly voted no this weekend to more austerity measures. So the ECB is maintaining the cap on the emergency assistance it's providing Greek banks, but it is now valuing Greek assets as riskier when it decides how much liquidity it can provide. So basically, this means some Greek banks may find it even tougher to qualify for emergency funds. And some analysts say the Greek banks may be forced to print their own money, which would mean dropping out of the single currency euro and returning to the drachma.
Last year, we saw a dramatic drop in oil prices. Now, of course, we have the Greek drama going on together with a possible Iran nuclear deal. And the Chinese stock market is also putting a lot of pressure now on the prices starting this week.
Yeah, lots of action in the oil pits. Oil prices slumped to a three-month low of about $54 a barrel. This is all about the big picture right now. We've got Greece, the struggling Chinese stock market, and the stronger dollar. So all of that having a big, big impact on oil. And one chief oil analyst is predicting that crude prices will fall to between $50 and $52 a barrel, and that Brent crude could fall to $55. So traders are worried that a potential Iranian nuclear deal may result in a flood of millions of barrels of oil to the market. The deadline for a final agreement is Tuesday, and Iran's foreign minister has hinted that the two sides are close to a nuclear accord. And then, of course, the Greek problem and the Chinese stock sell-off have all fueled worries about weak demand growth. And, of course, this is coming at a time when oil markets have already been hit by a glut of supply. So Jim, all of these factors have combined to give the bears a strong edge at the beginning of the trading week.
Oh, oil prices can be good for some, not good for others. Maybe we should go fill up our tank soon. Alexis Christofaris, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Our social media correspondent is G. Abby Lee. She's right here in our studio to talk about what's trending on the web regarding the Greek financial crisis. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. The biggest news on Greece right now is a quote-unquote resignation by the Greek finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis. He's on Twitter at Yanis Varoufakis with about 557,000 followers. Jim, the reason why I said quote-unquote is because from his personal blog, it seems like the decision to leave the finance ministry wasn't entirely voluntary. He wrote, soon after the announcement of the referendum results, I was made aware of a certain preference by some Eurogroup participants and assorted partners for my absence from its meetings, an idea that the prime minister judged to be potentially helpful to him in reaching an agreement. You can read the entire text on the web at yanisvarofakis.eu. It's been shared more than 10,000 times on Facebook and Twitter, respectively.
Well, definitely some undertones there. Has he been tweeting a lot since the resignation?
Not at all. He only tweeted once today that read, "Minister no more," with an exclamation mark, and linked that writing that I just mentioned. That tweet has been retweeted more than 17,000 times and marked as a favorite by more than 8,000 users. As for hashtags, hashtag Varoufakis has been used more than 48,000 times during the past 24 hours. That's according to the social media analytics website Topsy. Hashtag Greece was used more than 101,000 times today.
Wow. Well, what happened to that Kickstarter that aimed to raise enough money for Athens to pay off its debt?
Well, it's still going with just 9 hours left. We're talking about the Greek bailout fund by London-based Tom Feeney. The 29-year-old started the crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo and launched his campaign for raising 1.6 billion euros by July 7th. So far, he raised 1.9 million euros from more than 108,000 people. And although that's quite impressive, Jim, it's still not enough to reach his goal before the deadline. Hashtag Greek bailout fund was used more than 185,000 times on Twitter in the last 24 hours.
Well, it looks like the contributors will be getting their money back.
I think so.
Well, thanks for the update, G. We'll see you again tomorrow. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. Monday was a volatile day on the Chinese stock market, with the benchmark index in Shanghai finally closing up over 2.4% after surging nearly 8% at the open, then falling nearly a percent in the early afternoon. However, the Shenzhen Composite lost 2.7% Monday to wipe out an earlier gain of over 6.5%. The volatility followed the announcement of a series of government-backed support efforts over the weekend to end 3 weeks of sharp losses of nearly 30% that has wiped out over $3 trillion in wealth. Scott Kennedy of the Washington-based Centers for Strategic and International Studies told VOA's Victor Beatty that the Chinese markets have, up until recently, represented only a small part of the Chinese economy, but that has changed.
We're getting to a point where actually the size of the stock market matters. It's significant size of the economy. And they're trying to shift away from having a policy-directed market to one that's really based on the performance of companies. They are having a very difficult time making that transition in the context of also trying to have market-oriented reforms that deal with the entire economy. And in the context of a slowdown, they are facing a declining market that they don't want to decline, and they're having a hard time propping it up using the old tools of the past. I think we need to have more concern than we did in the past. It's still not the threat that one would think it might be. If you remember, Black Tuesday in 1987 in the United States, the market dropped 5%, and that caused a global panic. China's went down 30% in the space of 3 weeks. It's not as significant, but if it continues along this path, then I think we ought to really take notice.
What is causing the drop?
The drop is caused by concerns that the economy is not growing quickly, that valuations of companies are already extremely high, and that this is a bubble. All of this growth in the market that we've seen recently is of the last month. So this is folks taking profits and worried about the direction of the market in the future.
So isn't this just a correction?
You know, it's a major correction. China's got, you know, it's big, large swings in volatility. So it's not for the faint of heart. But, you know, it could go down even further. And for investors and people within China's economy, it matters a lot. There's not as big a direct effect on Americans and others outside the way Greece's economic problems are, because much of Greece's debt is based on borrowing in euros, which is tied to the global economy and beyond. So even though the problem in China is much more massive in size, its direct effect is actually smaller.
What do you make of the weekend activity among Chinese firms postponing their initial public offerings or IPOs, and also security companies pledging more than $19 billion for a fund to stabilize the stock market?
Those are small steps promoted by Chinese regulators to reduce demand for additional stocks and to put more liquidity in the market to soak up existing stocks that are out there. Those aren't very significant amounts of money that they're pledging. The turnover in China's stock market each day is far more than the amount that the government and the securities companies pledged to put forward for trading on Monday. I don't expect that to have more than a palliative effect. It's really going to depend on overall investor confidence in the direction of the economy.
Kennedy says there's little direct relationship between the Chinese market, which has surged more than 150% in the past year, and the overall health of the world's second largest economy. Meanwhile, the Hong Kong market fell more than 3% because of the Greek financial crisis. This is VOA's International Edition. Foreign ministers from Iran and a group of six world powers were in a familiar position Monday in Vienna, where they gathered for a final push to reach an agreement on Iran's nuclear program a day before their latest deadline. The diplomats have expressed a mix of progress and the need to finalize key unresolved issues in their bid to limit Iran's nuclear activity in return for needed sanctions relief. Tim Stafford is a research analyst at the Royal United Service Institute. He tells VOA's Jeffrey Young about what is preventing an agreement at this point.
So the number of sticking points, but the two major ones are going to be, firstly, the intrusiveness of the inspections that are going to be conducted by the IAEA monitors if a deal is reached. The P5 plus one would like monitors in all of Iran's nuclear sites. They'd like continuous access. But most importantly of all, they want access to Iranian nuclear scientists and to Iran's military sites. Now, Iran is very resistant to this, partly because it sees it as a violation of its sovereignty, and also it's worried what those inspectors are going to find, particularly maybe some of its past weaponization activity. The second question is going to be the phasing of the sanctions relief. The Iranians would like sanctions relief straight away. The Western powers say no, this has to come over a matter of months and years as Iran complies to the deal and to its terms.
What are the major sticking points regarding the quantity of that stockpile, the enrichment level of that stockpile, and its ultimate disposition? Do we have an issue here?
So there is an issue here. The administration's position has always been that Iran only wants a civilian nuclear program, and if you call Tehran's bluff by allowing it a civilian nuclear program, then once it has what it wants, then it will become less antagonistic, that you can make a concession in that area, and then force Iran to prove that it doesn't want anything more, like a nuclear weapons program. The problem here is that the deal puts limitations on the number of centrifuges that Iran will maintain for the next 10 to 15 years, the amount of enriched uranium it's allowed to possess for the next 10 to 15 years. The question at issue is Iran going to be allowed to conduct research and development on very advanced centrifuges so that in 15 years' time, when the deal expires, it could get to a weapons capability very quickly? So there seems to be some basic agreement on numbers and on quantity of enriched material, but not on what Iran is allowed to develop over the next 10 to 15 years.
Tim Stafford is a research analyst at the Royal United Service Institute. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Minions. They are small, yellow, pill-like creatures who have existed since the beginning of time, and they're the subject of a new 3D computer-animated adventure, action comedy film. Got all that? VOA's David Byrd serves us with this cinematic preview.
The film from Illumination Entertainment, the creators of the Despicable Me franchise, starts at the dawn of time and follows the Minions as they evolve through the ages, trying to find and to serve the worst of the worst.
Finding a master was easy.
A piñata!
Keeping a master. That's where things got tricky.
The film includes the voice of John Hamm, the star of the long-running, award-winning television show Mad Men. Hamm voices Herb Overkill, the husband of Oscar winner Sandra Bullock's supervillain Scarlett Overkill. Hamm says that the arc of this story intrigued him.
Exploring who these guys are through history was a really kind of inspired choice, and then having them land in this really fun, funny time period that also happened to be relatively interesting to me was kind of cool.
The time period is 1968, when the Minions, Stuart, Kevin, and Bob, are headed to the Villain Con in Orlando, Florida, a convention of the worst villains around. And Bullock's Scarlett Overkill is the star of the show. She eventually gets Stuart, Kevin, and Bob to try to steal Queen Elizabeth's crown, but they soon find out that they have to save all of minion kind from annihilation. The Minions hitch a ride with a seemingly innocent couple, Walter and Madge Nelson, voiced by Oscar nominee Michael Keaton and Golden Globe nominee Allison Janney. Janney has a special connection with the little yellow Minions in their blue overalls. She went to college with their creator.
I went to college with Chris Meledandri, who's the head of Illumination, who did all the Despicable Me's and the Minions, and so a dear friend, and he asked me to join the cast of Minions, and I was so completely honored and excited. And then I saw who I'd be voicing, the character of Madge, who was just deliciously, wonderfully evil in a not so evil package, in a very 1950s housewife package.
Allison Janney says that she regrets that in doing the animated film, she and Michael Keaton were never in the same room because their voice parts were recorded at different times.
But I only wish I'd gotten to be in the same room with Michael Keaton when we played these characters, because I saw him get out of a limo going to a pre-Oscar party, and he goes, "There's my wife." And I looked behind me. I was like, "Who are you?" And I realized he was talking to me. I forgot that he had been cast as my husband because we never got to act together.
For actor John Hamm, the project was something new after the end of Mad Men nearly 1 year ago.
It's been a fun year, you know? It's been a little work and a little vacation and then kind of a lot of press because then the stuff starts coming out and we have to talk about it and tell people about it, so it's been fun. It has certainly has not been a traditional unemployment period, I'll put it that way.
Minions also stars Oscar winner Jeffrey Rush as the narrator. Oscar nominee Steve Carell voices the young Gru, the villain that the Minions later work for in the Despicable Me films. Oscar nominee Stephen Coogan, currently the star of Showtime's Happy-ish, provides the voice of Professor Flux and the Tower Guard. The soundtrack features hit music from the 1960s, including Revolution by the Beatles, You Really Got Me by the Kinks, and Jimi Hendrix's Foxy Lady as Scarlet Overkill's theme song. I'm David Byrne.
Jimi Hendrix, much to the delight of our director, Tracy Carter. You can hear International Edition throughout the day at voanews.com with my colleagues Susan Yockey, Sarah Williams, Steve Norman, and Ray Kugel. We hope you tune in no matter when you happen to be awake. You can also follow us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Each year, the U.S. State Department sends Congress reports prepared by our diplomats assessing respect for human rights around the world. They evaluate how governments show respect for human dignity and individual freedoms, and they help shape our nation's foreign policies. The reports also signal to human rights defenders and activists under siege that we recognize their struggle and stand with them. For far too many people, 2014 was defined by suffering and abuse perpetrated by terrorist groups like ISIL, Boko Haram, and Al-Shabaab that exploit religious discourse and divisions to advance their destructive ideologies. Meanwhile, governments in China, Egypt, Eritrea, Iran, Russia, Saudi Arabia, and elsewhere continue to stifle a free press and the development of civil society by jailing journalists, bloggers, and others. As in previous years, the state of human rights in Somalia remains a particular U.S. concern. Civilians there continue to suffer from conflict-related abuses, including killings and the diversion or confiscation of humanitarian assistance by armed groups, particularly Al-Shabaab. According to the UN, 1,133,000 Somalis have been displaced internally, and more than 1 million others have fled to other nations. Clan militias and Al-Shabaab continue to commit grave abuses throughout the country, including extrajudicial killings, disappearances, cruel and unusual punishment, rape, restrictions on civil liberties and freedom of movement, and conscription and use of child soldiers. Some African Union peacekeeping troops also were found to have committed sexual abuse and exploitation, including rape. Violence and discrimination against women and girls, including rape, and female genital mutilation or cutting was widespread. Other major abuses included harsh and life-threatening prison conditions, arbitrary and politically motivated arrest and detention, trafficking in persons, abuse of and discrimination against minority clans, restrictions on worker rights, forced labor, and child labor. There is no self-importance or arrogance in preparing this and other reports. We in the United States have seen our own share of racial discord and unrest recently, so we approach this with great self-awareness. But we also understand that with regard for human rights, every country, including our own, has room to improve. We're committed to advancing universal rights, building partnerships that will move us forward, helping every man, woman, and child live up to their potential. And in cases like Somalia, we are also committed to speaking out for those unable to do so for themselves.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.